Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Well, we have plenty to talk about tonight. Public school funding moved forward in the state legislature. So do gender and transparency bills involving schools. And that Iowa property tax rollback that could certainly harm some local government budgets, all of that. But first, we're going to start with a story that made headlines across the nation this past weekend, the decision by National Democrats to strip Iowa of its first-in-the-nation presidential nominating position next year. Laura, you and I have been talking about this for oh so long, and it happened on Saturday.
Yes, in some ways, this was a foregone conclusion after the DNC's Rules and Bylaws Committee approved their proposal. But this is the formal vote from the full Democratic National Committee. And as expected, there is no position for Iowa in that early carve-out of states that would have their primaries in February of 2024.
Right. South Carolina is going to hold the first primary next year on Saturday, February 3rd, followed 3 days later by Nevada and New Hampshire on the 6th, and after that by Georgia on the 13th, Michigan on the 27th, and Iowa's nowhere in that list.
Iowa's nowhere in that list, and that may not be the final calendar because New Hampshire has a history of moving their primary up. They have a state law that says they hold the first primary, and so it's possible that their state legislature, which is Republican-controlled, may try to move their primary to January of 2024, and that would set up a confrontation with the DNC.
And the new Iowa Democratic chair, Rita Hart, she got a welcome to that position, all right, with this vote. She talked about how Democrats are going to move ahead, perhaps, with an unsanctioned contest. How realistic is that?
Well, Democrats need to hold some kind of caucus. It is in state law, but the law does not say they have to hold a presidential selection. So it's still possible. The Democrats are ironing out the details. They've talked about having some kind of mail-in balloting for presidential selection, but it's possible that they could hold precinct caucuses in February of 2024 that just deal with party business, things like electing delegates to the county convention and the central committee. And then later in March of 2024, they could have some kind of mail-in presidential preference. I mean, it's almost, it may not be that significant because if President Joe Biden runs for re-election, there probably won't be a contested Democratic primary anyway next year.
And we should mention that Iowa Republicans are indeed going to continue holding their first nominating contest in Iowa.
Yes, and they have a parade of prospective presidential candidates coming here all the time, and that is going to continue throughout this year.
All right, we've been talking about that. We will talk about it again in the future, depending upon what Iowa Democrats decide, but there was plenty going on in the state legislature last week, just a ton of things. Let's start with public school funding bills, all right? So the Iowa Senate passed a bill that would give public schools a 3% increase in per student funding. Still has to go through the House. Let's go through this now.
Yes, but initially the governor proposed a 2.5% increase in state supplemental aid to K through 12 school districts. The House Republicans proposed 3%. The Senate Republicans proposed 2%. But very quickly, the Senate Republicans got on board with 3%. And I think in some ways it was an optics decision because a 3% increase works out to about $107 million in new state funding for K through 12 public schools. And that's very similar to the first year cost of the school voucher bill that passed last month. It'll cost about $106 million. So I think that the idea of approving less funding, less additional funding for public schools than for private schools is why the Iowa Senate got on board with that slightly higher number of 3%. Of course, that's nothing close to what the school districts would like.
Right. So that 3% hike, should the governor sign it into law, would bring state general fund spending on public schools to about $3.7 billion, or about $7,635 per student, which is what, ironically, the private school voucher program would give to private school students.
Yes, the way the voucher bill was written, it's tied to the state's per pupil amount that they provide to public schools. So however much it increases for public schools, it's going to increase for those education savings accounts as well. I want to just mention again that this is 3% per pupil. It doesn't mean that every school district is going to get a 3% increase in state funding. And in fact, a Democratic state senator, Sarah Turner-Garriott, pointed out that 71 school districts across the state, that's about a quarter of the school districts, they have declining enrollment. And so they will actually end up getting less money next year than this year, even with that 3% increase.
And we should point out the Democrats unsuccessfully proposed, and they had to be unsuccessful because they have no power in the legislature, an increase of nearly 6% for public schools, or $267 million more. That had no chance.
It had no chance. They did get one vote for it, interestingly, of brand new State Senator Charlie McClintock. He did vote for that, but no, they are way down with only 16 of the 50 seats in the Iowa Senate. So that was not going to pass. But their point was, in proposing that amount, just under 6%, they said this would help schools keep up with rising costs, inflation, and also it would be equivalent to what the state is going to spend next year on corporate tax cuts and on this new school voucher law.
Public school funding will be discussed again, and we will have it on this program, Capital Week. All right. Also, last week, there was so much going on. The State House and the Senate both advanced gender identity bills. Now, we'll start talking about this. It's complex, and there are several bills that we're talking about here. First, let's start with the House Education Committee approving legislation that would stop school districts from providing accommodations to affirm a student's change in gender identity. And that's really based almost directly on the Lynmar School District's policy that they put together a while back.
It is, and several of the Republican legislators mentioned Lynmar in inspiring this bill. I want to say that there are a number of bills affecting LGBTQ students, and within the journalism community, many people were annoyed, and also the LGBTQ advocacy community, because two bills had overlapping at the same time Iowa House and Senate subcommittees were scheduled, and that's the only time members of the public can usually speak during a subcommittee. So there were a lot of unhappy people at the Capitol trying to figure out which committee to go to. But yes, the House bill is the one that would say that a school district needs to get written parental consent to have school staff use a student's a different name or preferred pronouns that are different from what's on the child's birth certificate. And that was a party line vote in the subcommittee.
Yeah, the Lynmar District generated all of this when they passed a their rule that says students can request a gender support plan to begin socially transitioning, and district policy lets students exclude their parents from taking part in the plan. That's the killer.
Yes. And well, interestingly, I mean, I think several other school districts have very similar policies. So I don't know why Lynmar ended up getting so much attention, but that was one where the governor and U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson went to a meeting with parents up at Lynmar. It was something that was an issue during last year's campaign. And certainly there are going to be very strongly contested Lynmar school board elections this fall on this issue. But yes, to hear some of the Republican legislators talk about it, they made it sound as if the school staff are encouraging students to keep secrets from parents. And what some of the school staff who spoke at the subcommittee said, that that's not their goal, is not to encourage students to keep secrets, but just recognizing that in some families it might not be safe for students to come out. They might be subjected to violence or, in some cases, even kicked out of the home.
Now, a separate bill was introduced last Thursday in the House to remove gender identity as a protected category from the state's Civil Rights Act.
So the Iowa Civil Rights Act, since 2007, that was a time of a Democratic trifecta, has included language protecting against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. And there have been multiple attempts under the Republican trifecta to get rid of this gender identity language, and none of them have advanced before. I am watching this very closely because when this kind of a bill was introduced 3 years ago at the beginning of the 2020 session, the House Judiciary Committee Chair, Stephen Holt, immediately told reporters, including me, the bill's dead. I'm not assigning it to a subcommittee. And I saw comment from him right away last week to say, I saw this bill was introduced. I saw it was assigned to your committee. Are you going to put it into a subcommittee? And there was no response. So I checked the website again. As of today, it has not been assigned to a subcommittee, but he also didn't promptly respond to journalists asking him about it. So I don't know what his intentions are. He's still the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, and the chair of a committee in the Iowa legislature can just kill a bill by just never letting it see the light of day. But a lot has changed between 2020 and now when it comes to the political salience of bills relating to gender identity.
Another bill filed in the House would require public universities to report to state lawmakers their definitions of lots of terms, including a lot related to LGBTQ people or issues of race and diversity.
Now, this has people very concerned in the communities of Ames and Iowa City and Cedar Falls, where the state universities are. Specifically, this is related to teacher training programs at the state universities, and it's a long list of terms, hot button terms, and related some of them to cultural sensitivity and some of them to oppression. And so clearly that what would happen is by the end of February, the universities would have to submit this information to the legislature. There would be a kind of study committee that would issue a report on it by the end of this year. And presumably that would tee up legislation in 2024 that might be regulating or restricting how state universities can train teachers in these areas.
We're not done talking about this yet, because a bill in the state Senate would prohibit instruction relating to gender identity for students in K through 8. This is a very broad-based bill.
Well, it is and it isn't, right? I did go to this subcommittee. This was the day where there were two subcommittees, and I chose this one. And the state senator, Jeff Taylor, who introduced the bill, told me that he thinks that both the proponents and the people who are against his bill are reading too broadly in what it would do. He said that it only affects curriculum. And he claimed that this bill would not prohibit, for instance, a teacher from acknowledging that a student in the classroom had two mothers or two fathers, and would not prohibit a school from somebody in the classroom from talking about these issues, a student from talking about it. It only deals with curriculum. But the way it's written is a little bit vague. So in the subcommittee, there were transgender children and their parents who came to testify. They were very upset about the bill. And there were equally emotional testimonies from people on the other side who, again, were saying that teachers are trying to indoctrinate or are trying to encourage students to make a transition and possibly keep it from parents. So this would change the current state law that it deals with human growth and development and would specifically say that there won't be any instruction on gender identity in those grades K through 8.
And one more bill we want to talk about. This one's in the Iowa House. A subcommittee advanced it. It would require school districts and charter schools to make classroom materials available to parents, along with a list of their library books and a process to challenge them. This is something the governor has wanted.
It is, and it's something that was introduced last year. And I remember writing about this last year because the fiscal note by the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency estimated that it would cost school districts across the state about $27 million to implement this plan, because this would be a lot of classroom materials. And the way it was written, they would all have to be online prior to the beginning of the semester, of each semester. And so teachers were upset about it because they felt that they wouldn't have flexibility. For instance, if some current event happened and they wanted to talk about it in class, or if they just feeling their way through the year, sometimes some classes, they sense that maybe they need a little bit more time to spend on a certain unit, the teachers wouldn't be able to make those changes in the middle of the semester. They would have to stick to whatever had been posted online at the beginning.
And last week in Des Moines, during an event hosted by a group called Moms for Liberty, and that's the group that says it wants to protect parents' rights in education, the governor, Governor Reynolds, suggested a state policy that would make it so that if any one Iowa school district decides to remove an educational book or other piece of material from the school, every other Iowa school district has to consider doing exactly the same thing.
Yes, she announced that she had submitted a proposal. I have not seen the bill language yet, but it had several pieces to it. One was no instruction on sexual activities or gender identity from kindergarten through third grade. One was similar to what we discussed already. Schools have to keep parents informed and can only use new names and pronouns for students after getting written parental consent. And one that they would have to post online everything about the books available in the curriculum. And then, as you said, this is the thing that was news to a lot of people in the public schools community. Any material removed in any one school district in Iowa would mean that other school districts would need express consent from parents before students could be exposed to that. And, you know, there are a lot of districts that are very small with fewer than 500 kids compared to the Des Moines public schools have 30,000 students. And so it's not clear how that would be implemented. But that was new that I hadn't seen before in any of the other bills.
With all of this that we've just talked about, it does appear that Iowa is the petri dish for a national effort to really come after schools that parents believe are misteaching their children, teaching them wrong things. Iowa's really in the forefront of this thing.
It is. And there are the same advocates who are working in a number of other states to pass similar school voucher programs. In fact, the governor is going to be in Washington this week, speaking at the Cato Institute and some national events about this kind of effort. And it is definitely part of a blueprint that people are pushing in a number of states, not just Iowa.
Wow. Let's take a breath here. 15 after the hour, wherever you're listening to us, and you are in tune With KHOR Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. And there's a lot going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bell, and we're here every week at this time to talk about politics, Iowa style, how it's affecting all of us. Okay, enough with schools. Let's talk about property tax rollback. The lead story on KCCI TV at 6 o'clock tonight. This is a very big deal. The state Senate passed a bill to fix an error in a 2021 property tax law that gave local governments more money than intended, and now they want to claw it back, and that could harm local governments.
So the seeds of this go back to the 2013 commercial property tax cut, which was an enormous property tax cut that had a lot of pieces to it. But one part was that multi-unit housing, so things like apartment buildings, which had been taxed like commercial property, they were put in a separate category that was going to have a gradually declining property tax rate until by 2022, it was going to be the same as residential property, which is taxed at a much lower rate. This was a great deal for landlords. And so what happened in 2021 is they passed a bill that implemented this. It sped up the implementation of this. But then when the State Department of Revenue was calculating the property tax allocations for different cities, they did it incorrectly. And what the mystery, and I can't get an answer, I saw Iowa Public Radio also couldn't get an answer from the State Department of Revenue, is why didn't they notify local governments right away when they noticed this error last October? Because local governments are well into the process of planning their budgets for next year, and they were assuming they had a certain amount of money available, and it turns out they're going to have quite a bit less in some cases.
Right. Now, usually local governments have to have their budgets in by March 31st. Well, that's coming right up here. That's not enough time if the legislature passes this change to get anything in. But the bill passed by the Senate would let the local entities have until April 30th. But still, there are going to have to be some big changes on the local level.
Yeah, and that's the local governments. I watched the subcommittee on this, and they were really pleading with the legislators to give them another year, do something where the state allocates money to make up, it could be about $133 million overall across the state, allocate that money to help local governments get through the next year and then plan for next year, because this is a lot of money to have to remove from their budgets in some cases. Of course, it depends on how much multi-residential housing they have. But in a place like Ames or Iowa City, where there are a lot of apartment buildings, this is going to be a big hit to the city budget.
And I'm going to be talking with Ames Mayor John Hala next Monday morning live on Local Talk. He'll be my guest, and we're going to talk about this and other things that's coming up in Ames. They will be voting on a new budget in Ames very, very quickly, and this is going to have to be factored in somehow. All right, Governor Reynolds' state health care plan. It's a big plan. It's a vast plan. One of several big, vast plans she has this year in the legislature. It is on the move. Let's talk about that.
So there are several pieces to this, and some of them she's proposed before. One area is making hormonal birth control pills available over the counter. That's something that she's proposed. It got through the Iowa Senate one year, didn't go anywhere in the House. A new piece of this bill would help rural hospitals qualify for a special new classification that is specifically would help the hospital in Keokuk, which closed a few months ago, help it to reopen. This program that would fund pregnancy centers that discourage women from having abortions, it would quadruple the state funds that go to those. And there would be an area of the bill limiting damages in medical malpractice. But I think that's going to end up being separated from the rest of it because there's already legislation that's advancing on the medical malpractice liability.
And we're going to talk about that in just a minute or two, that particular part. All right, here comes a fun one now, at least for me. The governor introduced last week a bill to restructure state government. It's a mere 1,500 pages. That's 1,500 pages. Laura, I know you probably only had time to get through 1,250 of these pages, but what have you learned so far?
I mean, Dennis, the funny thing is at the bottom of every bill, there's always an explanation that the Legislative Services Agency provides us, usually a few paragraphs explaining in more simple language what the bill does. The explanation of this bill is 27 pages long. Okay, that is how enormous this bill is. So I'm just going to give you the view from 30,000 feet. That when the governor announced this plan to restructure state government during her condition of the state address, she said that the main goal would be consolidating cabinet agencies from 37 down to 16, and that is part of it. But I would say a general theme running through the bill is consolidating more power in the hands of the governor and the attorney general. So there are a number of positions in state government that currently are approved for fixed terms. All of those would change so that all of those officials, the labor commissioner, the workers' comp commissioner, the superintendents of banking and credit unions, all of those positions would become ones where the governor can fire the person at any time, like most cabinet agencies. The Office of Consumer Advocate, which is under the attorney general's office, the attorney general would have much more direct control over how that office works. Again, the person would not be confirmed for a fixed term. It would be someone Brenna Byrd can fire at any time. And another big area of concern about this bill is that smaller state agencies are being folded into larger ones. And in some cases, that means that agencies that are charged with investigating a larger agency are going to be folded into that agency. So for instance, the state historic preservation effort is going to be folded into the Iowa Economic Development Agency. And there has already been concern raised by the Sierra Club, among others, that this might mean that the Economic Development Authority leadership can just quash any kind of environmental review or archaeological review that could affect a development project.
I think that was 20,000 feet, not 30. That's very good. Now, bear in mind, every journalist in the state is reading through this bill. It just takes a while to go through 1,500 pages.
There are a lot of angles to it. I mean, another area is that the attorney general is going to have control over some areas that county attorneys have had. So any election-related crimes could only be prosecuted and investigated by the attorney general's office, not by county attorneys.
Laura will have more on this next week, and I will too. I will try to read the 27 pages. Laura will probably get through 1,500. All right, we'll go from there. Take a drink, Laura. Have a good time. She's taking a drink because we're talking so fast here. It's a drink of water, though, isn't it? Just water.
Just water. Just water.
Let's go back to, well, yes, that's what it looks like. Water. All right, tort reform is on track. And we talked about that just briefly with the governor's health care bill. This is where House lawmakers in the Senate version on working on these. They're advancing bills that would cap non-economic damages in lawsuits against truckers and commercial drivers and in medical malpractice cases. So, and this is something the governor has wanted, as we said last week. Many states have already passed this.
So there are these two bills are similar in some ways and different. First of all, these are both bills that the Iowa House has refused to pass the previous 2 years. So this is try three, and it's gotten pretty far now to the point where at least it advanced from House committees. And so I think some arm twisting may have gone on behind the scenes, because as recently as a couple of weeks ago, I had heard from sources that, oh, there wasn't enough support to get this medical malpractice reform out of the Health and Human Services Committee, or there wasn't enough support in the Judiciary Committee to get the trucking liability limits through. And that turned out not to be true. There were Republicans in both committees who voted no, but not enough of them to block these from passing. So the medical malpractice there, it would limit damages, non-economic damages, to at most $1 million. I think that it may be amended on the floor. There are a number of people in the Republican caucus who think $1 million is far too little. And there's already an amendment that's been filed that would increase the cap to $15 million. So I'm interested to see what would happen. The testimony in the subcommittee, some of it was very emotional about some of these cases that have led to the large verdicts.
And an ad is already running on WHO radio in Des Moines, one of the really big radio stations in Iowa, against the plans.
And it's featuring Sam Clovis, who is kind of a conservative icon in Iowa. He ran for a couple of different offices in 2014, and he used to be a supporter of medical malpractice caps until he became a victim of a serious medical error that left him paralyzed from the waist down. And this is something he's been giving radio interviews. He's voicing this ad, as you mentioned, and he's also been having individual conversations with state legislators about how, you know, they should not be supplanting the role of a jury, which hears all the facts and decides how much is fair to award somebody who's been the victim of malpractice.
All right. Also in the State House and also in the State Senate version of this or section of this program, there are many things we can talk about. But one of the more interesting things to me is that a bill in the Senate would let teenagers work in fields like mining and meatpacking, from which they are now prohibited for safety reasons. This is a very interesting turn of events here. I mean, the two sides obviously have far different opinions. What's going on here?
Well, it reminded me of the bill last year, the child care bill, that mentioned that 16-year-olds would be able to work unsupervised during certain hours of the day in child care centers. And this is an issue. The workforce shortage is a huge issue across Iowa. And one way of addressing it is to let teenagers work. There was a separate proposal that would let teenagers serve alcoholic drinks with supervision in restaurants. And so this seems to be a theme running through the legislature that maybe this is a way employers can find the labor that they need. Of course, Democrats are very against these bills, saying that the state should not be encouraging more teenagers to work in potentially dangerous occupations.
Yeah, it does seem, and again, I'm looking at this from 30,000 feet, the teenagers working at a meatpacking plant maybe are in some danger in terms of what goes on inside some of those plants, and yet 14 to 17-year-olds would be allowed to be there.
I mean, there are a lot of injuries in meatpacking plants. It's definitely an area where that's what, for one thing, when they were reforming several years ago, the workers' compensation system, so much of it was meant to address injuries that are common in meatpacking plants. So, yes, I mean, I think that this will be very controversial if it continues to move forward.
Let's talk about abortion. No, nothing. Let's not get anybody worried here. Abortion is still legal in Iowa up to 20 weeks. But there were a couple of things last week of interest involving Iowa. Number one, Minnesota's governor, Minnesota, signed a bill codifying Roe versus Wade. Let's talk about that.
So in Minnesota, which is part of the Planned Parenthood affiliate that includes Iowa and a few other states, in Minnesota has now guaranteed that abortion will remain legal no matter what happens federally. And so that means that if Iowa does end up eventually imposing much more severe limits, that Iowans, probably a lot of them, would be traveling either to Minnesota or to Illinois because abortion will be legal.
Here's something that does affect Iowa. State Attorney General Brenna Byrd and 19 other Republican state attorneys general sent a letter to Walgreens and CVS, two of the biggest pharmacies in the nation, Walgreens and CVS, saying they could face legal action if they sell abortion pills by mail in their states.
Yeah, so this is something that federal law has prohibited sending abortion medication through the mail in some circumstances, but the Biden Justice Department issued an opinion in December that said that actually this doesn't affect all shipments of mifepristone. It just would mean it would only apply to shipments if somebody intended to break the law. And so these Republican attorney generals are warning the pharmacies, don't count on this legal opinion from the Biden administration, because this is going to be challenged in court and you could be on the hook for violating federal law. I also want to mention, I was just reading today about a lawsuit that's pending in Texas, which you wouldn't think it would affect Iowa, but it's possible that a federal judge in Texas could ban mifepristone, which is one of the main drugs used to induce a medication in abortion. He could issue a ruling that bans that nationwide. And so that actually could end up affecting abortions in all 50 states. But that ruling could come as early as this week.
And again, the Iowa Supreme Court is dealing with an abortion issue, and we're not expecting a decision on that until after the legislature ends its session sometime in April or May.
Yes, I mean, they haven't even scheduled oral arguments, so I would imagine maybe sometime in the fall the Iowa Supreme Court will rule on that. Whether to reinstate the 2018 law that would ban most abortions after 6 weeks, which was already struck down in 2019.
Couple of quickies at the end here. Governor Reynolds has appointed a new Iowa National Guard chief.
Yes, we mentioned that General Benjamin Correll has announced his retirement, and Brigadier General Stephen Osborne is going to be the new head of the Iowa National Guard under the governor's decision.
And just today, Monday, as we go live on this Monday night, she appointed a new Law Enforcement Academy director, and there's a story behind the story.
Yeah, so this is Sergeant Brady Carney of the Des Moines Police Department Investigations Division is going to be the next head of the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. I was watching this because in 2021, a Democratic state representative from Newton, Wes Breckenridge, stepped down in the middle of his term to become the deputy director of the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. And I wondered if that might be a precursor to him becoming the next director. But no, the governor did not appoint him. She appointed the Sergeant Brady Carney of the Des Moines PD.
All right. And in the last 30 seconds, what in the world are you going to be looking at this week besides your nighttime reading of 1,500 pages of the reorganization bill? What are you going to be looking at?
Well, I'm going to be looking at whether this medical malpractice and the trucking liability limitations, whether those are debated on the House floor. That could happen later this week. Tomorrow, there's going to be a hearing in the House Environmental Protection Committee related to carbon pipelines that I'm planning to attend. It's the speakers are all going to be people who support the carbon capture and sequestration, but I'm sure that there will be other members of the public there. And I'm going to be watching to see if the bill language appears on the governor's new proposals relating to school books and school libraries.
Laura, great show as usual. See you next week.
See you next week, Dennis.
We are out of time. You have been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio, your listening post for politics, Iowa style. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back next week in the same time slot when we will talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics in Iowa. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, happy, and healthy week.